This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
A lot of people have a lot of opinions about climate change. However, there is only one set of actual facts. Now, a new study shows that an important group of people are getting some of those facts wrong. Science teachers.
Secondary science teachers, and these are ones that claim to teach extensively about climate change, they exhibit misconceptions at a similar rate to the general American public.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk about that study. We'll also hear from two groups of students, one focused on their future careers and one that is completing a trip to Ecuador. And we'll also spend an academic minute teaching kids to think about stuff. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. You'd like to think that if anyone would have accurate information about global climate change, it would be science teachers. But a new study sponsored by the National Science Foundation shows that this is not the case. The lead researcher of that study was Dr. Ben Herman, an assistant professor of science education at the University of Missouri. I spoke to Dr. Herman about the study.
The study was sponsored by a National Science Foundation climate change education grant. It was focused at looking at the state of climate change education in Florida and the Caribbean. And so part of that was looking at, hey, what are the teacher knowledge bases and what are their climate change teaching practices?
So what misperceptions did you find? How big is the problem?
Well, one of the overarching issue is that secondary science teachers, and these are ones that claim to teach extensively about climate change, they exhibit misconceptions at a similar rate to the general American public. For instance, a large proportion thought that ozone layer depletion was a primary driver of climate change. Another issue is that a large proportion thought that in order to be valid, climate change must be based on controlled experiments, which is just patently false. I mean, controlled experiments would be inappropriate and ineffective at a global scale. I mean, you can't take one Earth and put it in a box and have it as a control and another Earth and put another box and have it as a treatment. But there are many other valid ways of researching climate change. For instance, you can use proxy data such as ice cores and things like that and modeling to develop a valid understanding of how our climate is changing due to anthropogenic causes.
Why was it this specific part of the world, you know, Florida and the Caribbean? What was the point of doing the study in that region?
That was part of the grant. And so the National Science Foundation had released some climate change education grants, and this project was part of that, and the specific geographic focus was in that area. And to be honest, that area is going to have some of the biggest impacts from climate change due to things like sea level rise and the like. So it made sense to do the research in that area.
It sounds like some of it was just outdated perceptions, things we used to think happened and we've proven doesn't.
In a sense, yeah, because the research that I compared to with the American public was published some time ago. I'd have to look back. So you're spot on with that. Some of the misperceptions, like the ozone layer depletion, I mean, those are common misconceptions in the public. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there is so much misinformation in the media, particularly about how scientists understand something like climate change. I mean, they really do have some valid methodologies and approaches to looking at this problem. But oftentimes, a lot of the doubt with climate change, particularly amongst teachers, are a few things. First of all, is that they tend to focus on specific disciplines when they're going through teacher preparation. For instance, you'll have a secondary biology teacher, and they focus primarily on biology and take coursework in that. A chemistry teacher focuses primarily on chemistry. And so they don't get the cross-disciplinary study that's required to understand something like climate change, because climate change is a big problem and draws from so many disciplines. And so what happens is they're oftentimes left to get their climate change information like the rest of us, and possibly from, if they're lucky, classroom sources like textbooks that hopefully accurately portray climate change.
Science moves fast, so it sounds like there should be more professional development offered, right?
I think that's a good point. You know, teachers want and need support to keep them updated on the newest scientific developments and how scientists come to understand climate change. But the issue is that, like I said, we've got specialty areas in science teacher preparation. oftentimes there isn't the funding nor support for professional development opportunities for teachers to address something like climate change or have the materials even that are spot on accurate about how climate scientists work is conducted and then how to teach this important topic in the classrooms.
Is politics involved in any of this? Some school districts might say, no, you're not going to be teaching that climate change stuff in my school.
I don't perceive that that happens at the school district level, but teachers have shown to have some resistance from the general public about climate change, and largely it's because of some of the misperceptions. But I'm pretty optimistic, though, that as there's more acceptance in the public sphere that climate change is largely due to anthropogenic causes, as far as the environmental issue we're talking about, that you'll have less and less resistance to the teaching of climate change from the public sphere. And so teachers, from my understanding, do face some resistance from the public sphere. And so there was I believe it was the Heartland Institute, or there's a book that was actually sent to me from, I can tell you right here, yeah, the Heartland Institute. I've got this book on my desk, and it says Why Scientists Disagree About Global Warming. And this was, from what I understand, has been sent to educators, science educators across the U.S., and it's, this is an example of some resistance where teachers are being provided some misinformation at a larger scale.
Well, of course, you honed in on this one specific geographic area. Do you think this is a problem throughout the country?
And that's, I'm glad you brought that up. That's one thing I want to make clear is, the limitation of the study is it does focus on a specific area. And so I think that you'll find misconceptions in the public at large across the country. And do I think science teachers quite possibly have these misconceptions across the nation and even in other nations or internationally? I think so. Part of it's due to the reasons why I said is the teacher preparation, we need to do a better job as far as helping teachers develop a deep understanding from a cross-disciplinary focus of climate change and how climate scientists work and understand climate change, and then also provide professional development opportunities for those knowledge bases to be increased. But for me to be able to say firmly, yes, that's the case, I couldn't from a researcher standpoint. We need wider scale studies that look at teachers across the nation to determine that.
All right. What didn't I ask you that you think people should know?
I think one thing is that as far as teachers, I mean, they're a very passionate group of people that deeply care about preparing children for tackling issues such as climate change. And so they want and need the support to develop the knowledge and approaches necessary for effectively instructing about this topic, given that it's probably the most significant environmental issue that we're facing today. I'm pretty optimistic, again, that teachers will be provided the support for a couple reasons. First, I think, like I said, the validity of anthropogenic climate change will become more recognized in the public sphere. And partially this is because climate change communication and education research efforts have focused in on how do we communicate about this more effectively, and we've been gaining some traction in that sense. So I'm very optimistic that as far as climate change education, we'll be getting better at that.
Dr. Ben Herman is an assistant professor of science education at the University of Missouri. There are high school students across the western New York region who are completely focused on their careers. From station WBFO in Buffalo, New York, senior reporter Eileen Buckley met with a group of students enrolled in a program called P-TECH.
Students in the Pathways to Early College High School traveled from their Laguitas campus in Fredonia to an Erie 2 BOCES site in Orchard Park. That's where they met with us to talk about the six-year program that's preparing them for the workforce. What we discovered was a very close-knit group of students who respect one another. P-TECH students are on their way to earning a high school diploma while gaining work experience and a future associate's degree.
At P-TECH, we're still kind of all one big group. We all know each other. It's different than what a normal high school would be.
10th grader Luke Peterson Rydesall tells us the P-TECH program has offered him an advantage to excel to a future career in engineering.
Back in middle school, before I joined this program, I was barely passing all my classes. And now in P-TECH, I have everything high 80s, low 90s. It's wonderful.
What changed for you? What's the difference?
Honestly, I think it was my mentality. When I came here, that changed. It's like, all right, you're in a program. This is a special thing. You have to make sure you use this opportunity right and not waste it.
And not wasting their PTEC experience appeared to be the general focus. Students have a strong commitment to work in a specific field. Ninth grader Hope Smith is studying computer science in the CAD program.
I've always really loved technology and the good it can do for humanity, and we're moving into fully the technology era. So I don't want to stay behind, and I find it very interesting.
These students are highly motivated to complete high school and quickly move into their college-level associate degree while passing by some of the day-to-day high school drama.
I grew up in Jamestown. Jamestown's not good. People there, they're not nice, and I wanted something different. It was very awful. People there were very mean. You were in one of the three groups. You were a bully, you were bullied, or you were left alone. And it was mainly about your appearance, or if you acted just slightly different than anybody else.
But some social struggles continue.
We're college students next year, but there's kids that still struggle with that mature thing. They hop around, throw waffles in the commons.
Ninth grader Joseph Swartz comes from Frewsburg Central Schools. He's interested in aerospace. He says learning comes easy to him.
Because they set us free, pretty much. They give us our academic, what we need to do. We're self-learners. And if we can get that done first, we can go out to the makerspace, which is a newer thing where you go outside and you make whatever you want. I've seen a kid make a little LCD touchscreen just out of a 9-volt battery, a couple wires, and a little LCD screen.
I really wasn't doing too good in school to begin with, and it looked like something more that piqued my interest because I really wasn't a big fan of school at the time, but now I'm really starting to like it a lot more.
10th grader Robert Goodrich is interested in engineering. He says the biggest challenge is dealing with people and getting along with others.
Just everyone has their own different personality, so someone might get a little aggravated when you joke about them with that, but someone else might not. So you just got to figure out how everybody is and how they react to stuff.
One of the students we spoke with is still searching for a pathway.
I haven't picked a path to study, but to be honest, I don't really know why I'm in this program.
Ninth grader Sarah Rosario, who goes by the nickname Garth, identifies as gender neutral.
But to be honest, I'm from Dunkirk. I hate Dunkirk. I don't say I hate things much because I don't like that word, but that's the only way I can really put it. I'm open about pretty much anything, because even if I tried to be secretive, it's still going to get out there somehow.
How do you cope with it?
Oh, I don't cope with it. It's just stuck here. I can't really get it out of my mind, and I just sit and cry myself to sleep. I can't take a lot of pain anymore.
As our conversation evolved with Rosario, we discussed transgender issues surrounding school policies on the use of bathrooms and locker rooms. But it was interrupted by one of the school program leaders who said we were not allowed to discuss gender issues with their students.
I don't know. I feel like the whole trans thing with the bathroom and all that, it's just so ridiculous.
What is the choice for you?
I
don't think it's a fair question to ask me this.
I'll answer it. I'm pretty much neutral. I don't feel like a guy and I don't feel like a girl. I'm just in between.
And that segment is part of the Cafeteria Chat series from WBFO Radio in Buffalo, New York. Still to come, a once-in-a-lifetime trip abroad is designed to inspire the students who participated. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. A group of students from Newburgh, New York, recently took a trip to Ecuador. They'll be applying their global service learning to community impact projects in their neighborhood. The Best of Our Knowledge's Allison Dunn spoke with a few of these students and their teachers before they went on the trip.
Jacqueline Hesse and Christine McCartney are ELA teachers at Excelsior Academy, a six-year P-TECH program in partnership with IBM at Newburgh Free Academy. They're also co-founders of Global to Local, a program that immerses students in another culture where they volunteer for positive social change and import that experience to improve their own community. Hesse wants students to use their experiences abroad as a springboard to arrive at a different perspective on their own community.
While we're in Ecuador, we're staying at a place called Casa Victoria, which is an after-school program for struggling students in Quito. And we're going to be teaching, the students are going to teach some coding skills to them. We're bringing robots and tablets to donate. We're bringing some books for their library, and we're building a learning center on the grounds of Casa Victoria. And they're also going to have a lot of time to spend with this, the woman Alicia, who founded the organization, who is an amazing example of a grassroots activist. She saw a need in her city. She didn't want to wait for someone else to fill that need, so she and her husband purchased this huge old house and redid it and made it into this program that now serves 60 students on a daily basis. So we think that will be really inspiring.
Global to Local has yearly requirements for participation. The program builds toward a community-based service learning project in Newburgh during students' senior year of high school. McCartney hopes that what the students experience in Ecuador heightens their desire to better Newburgh.
By going to another country and looking at some of the issues that city or that area in Quito they're dealing with will help them look at Newburgh in a new way and be able to sort of see the issues that Newburgh face as challenges and something that they're wanting to be involved in bettering our city. So I think the more than anything, I want them to sort of see the power of community involvement and be inspired to want to get involved in Newburgh.
Again, Hesse.
So upon returning from Ecuador, our students are going to be project managers for community impact projects in Newburgh that we envision being of their own choosing, partnering smartly with organizations that are already doing a lot of work, picking issues that matter to them, and working together as a group of 50. They'll be in their 12th grade year at Excelsior Academy trying to make some change in the community.
Some of the students have ideas for their projects. Ignacio Salim, who teaches coding to underserved youth at the Newburgh Armory Unity Center, has ideas for a project or projects when he returns.
There's two major things that I want to address in Newburgh. I think technology, upgrading the technology in Newburgh can be a really good standpoint, considering that a lot of technology here are currently outdated. And being a P-TECH program, we have that background knowledge to be able to pursue it effectively. Also, one of my teachers once told me that if the city looks like a jungle, then people are going to act like animals. And if we could renovate different areas around Newburgh that may look under or just not professional at all, and we could fix the streets and fix houses that have been abandoned and fix all of these different things and make the city of Newburgh look beautiful, then the people will change their perspectives while they're here.
He would like to see improved technology to make the streets safer, for example. Addison Lima hopes to make deep connections with students at Casa Victoria.
Listen to them, give them advice, and help them with schoolwork or even, you know, choices they have to make in life.
He would like to serve as a mentor upon return and improve his youth leadership skills. For Elise Goings-Perot, the Ecuador trip is a perfect marriage of two big parts of her life, travel and community service.
I'm kind of thinking of doing something anti-violence, how, you know, violence always isn't always the answer, and they can put those feelings, like those violent thoughts, into something else. So if you can put that into a project, like art-based or technology-based, maybe you can funnel kind of those things into a different aspect in somebody's life.
Hesse talks about another aspect of the program abroad.
While we're in Ecuador, we're actually going to be implementing a very short, since we're only there for 10 days, leadership curriculum. So we're going to work with the students while we're there to actually build some concrete skills, such as how to speak to someone when you need to form an alliance with them or a partnership with them when they're maybe not seeing your goals as being aligned. Or we're going to talk about collaboration and working smartly within a group. And these are professional skills that we already use in Excelsior, but because these students are going to be project managers, we want to make sure that they're equipped with the skills that they're going to need. So we'll be modifying curriculum that we've actually taught to adults as facilitators with teachers from around the Hudson Valley and using that with our students to make sure that they're as ready as possible for the work in the fall.
Reporting for the Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Allison Dunn.
The key to a student's future isn't teaching them stuff. It's teaching them how to think about stuff. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Teaching critical thinking could be key to our students' futures. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Amanda Heiner, assistant professor of English at Winthrop University, examines a few ways to get students thinking differently.
National surveys consistently reveal that today's employers highly value soft skills, such as the ability to think critically, innovate in the workplace, and communicate effectively. Not surprisingly, further studies suggest that these skills are associated with higher rates of employability and faster professional advancement. Though college faculty members strive to cultivate critical thinking skills in their students, research suggests that over a third of college students fail to demonstrate any gains in critical thinking after completing 4 years of college. But is critical thinking something that can be improved through classroom instruction? Generally, experts agree that critical thinking involves metacognitive awareness and a systematic application of strategies to analyze and assess information and claims. However, many college professors have never considered how teaching critical thinking skills can improve content area teaching and student outcomes. In what experts call the immersion method, critical thinking instruction is simply assumed to happen as a natural byproduct of instruction in specific disciplinary content. This is the most common method of integrating critical thinking into college courses, yet an important meta-analysis of research on critical thinking instruction reveals that it is least effective in terms of student outcomes. The same study indicates that a mixed approach in which explicit critical thinking instruction is combined with discipline-specific instruction is most effective. The key is to make instruction in critical thinking intentional and to equip students with analytical strategies and tools to help them make sense of complex information and evaluate competing claims. To sum up, research confirms that professors should be explicit about integrating critical thinking instruction into their courses, should designate courses or units to cover critical thinking strategies, and should reinforce students' knowledge of critical thinking concepts through application and repetition.
That was Amanda Heiner of Winthrop University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.